the conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Lisa. Good evening, everyone. We've got a slight technical issue. I can't see who is physically on the call this evening. I'm going to call out the list of people registered on this work group, and if you'd be so kind, just to say if you are on the call. We'll start with Karim. I know who is on the call. James Fadel.
Here.
Barry Cobb.
Present.
Mason Cole.
Yes, here.
Paul Corwin. Don't seem to have him yet. Paul Diaz.
Here.
Avery Doria. Jeffrey Eckhouse.
Here.
Chuck Gomes. Alan Greenberg. We
here.
Do have Tatiana Kramtsova.
I'm here.
Cheryl Langdon-Dorr. We do have Helen Laverty.
Here.
Viva, are you on the call? Viva Mutasami?
Did he need a dial out?
Yes, we're currently doing that. I just didn't know if he was on the call yet.
He was on the call before. I see he got, the meeting view is working again. He got disconnected, so I guess he might try dialing in
okay.
again.
Okay. Michelle Nalon? Michael O'Connor?
I'm here.
Michael Palage?
Here.
Mike Rodenbach? Tim Reeves?
Here. And by the way, it's McKelly, not Michelle.
Sorry, Kelly. Matt Serlin. And Michael Young. And from staff, we have Marika Konings and Glenn Giesler, Gruber White, myself.
I'm sorry, were Matt and Michael on the call or not? I didn't
Matt and Michael, no.
No, okay.
Yeah. Giesler, that's Margie Milam. I'm also on the call.
Margie, sorry about that. And Margie Milam. Apologies, this won't happen again.
Sorry, the meeting view is working now, and there's another number. It is 819-65101.
Thank you, Glenn. Alan, over to you.
Okay. The first item on the agenda is welcome, and I welcome you all. The other suggestion was to have a brief introduction of working group members. Is it do the people feel it's worthwhile to go around the table very quickly and just say who you're representing and what your interests are? Or is just your membership affiliation sufficient? Any comments? No comments? Then we will skip it and assume that we know who you are based on what group you belong to.
Alan, just one comment. I think
yes.
We have received statements of interest for almost everyone, so
yes,
these will be posted so people can have a look and,
yeah.
and look at everyone's background.
Sorry, Marika, they are posted on the website.
Perfect. And I will get them posted as well. On
under the heading of post-expiry domain name recovery and the issues page.
Yep.
Thank you.
I'll send around the link.
The next item on the proposed agenda was the election of working group chair. Now, Michael Palage had put out a suggestion that perhaps we want to consider co-chairs and perhaps we want to defer election of the chair until we have a better feeling for where the group is going and the interactions and interests of the people. Could we have a discussion on that? I've agreed to act as an interim chair. My only concern with continuing as interim past this meeting is at the moment the at-large in ALAC is not well represented on this group, and as the person who initiated the original issues report, I feel somewhat conflicted being the main proponent of the topic and trying to be an impartial chair at the same time. But I can certainly try to do that until we get as far as electing a chair. But any other comments? Michael, do you have further on what you put in your email?
As I said, I was just trying to share my experience based upon some of the earlier ICANN working groups. And again, in working group B, we actually had three co-chairs on that particular issue. So again, I was just looking for some, if you will, flexibility to share the workload because, again, chair is a thankless job, and I appreciate the interim thankless job you have taken to date on that, Alan. And again, I think what I'd like to just do is, in the first meeting or two, we should have a better idea of where some of the markers are on this issue. I think there was a good dialogue that took place in Sydney. I wasn't able to attend, but I listened to the MP3 recording. So hopefully with the participants we have here today, we can begin to sort of set some meets and bounds, see where people are lining up on some of the issues, and then perhaps do, you know, identify some co-chairs to, if you will, take the burden off of you, because I do believe it is important. For the ALAC that was the original group that requested this issues report to have your voice in a strong advocacy role.
Are you volunteering to be the chair or co-chair, by the way? He asks innocently.
I have no problem, you know, helping you, and when you know, I have no problem helping out.
Any other thoughts on the issue?
Yeah, this is Jeff Eckhouse. One comment is it seems like we might have a hard enough time finding one chair. I'm not sure if we'd be able to find two co-chairs.
Just to sort of share some experience again with Working Group B, for the first 6 months I was the sole chair, and then when different papers began to be offered, different groups, there emerged sort of three different viewpoints, and that's when three different co-chairs were elected, myself, Kathy Klein, and Philip Shepherd. So again, I think what's important is a chair should have no more or no less power than the individual participants. All the chair is doing is driving the group towards, you know, hopefully a conclusion. And we do have some timelines here. So as I said, I could help out. You know, I could take the initial reins if no one else wants it. And at any point in time when a certain sector believes that, you know, they need, you know, they want to have share part of the bully pulpit or something along that nature, you know, so we elect a co-chair. I just think that's the best way to do it. I don't want to waste time on procedure. I want us to just sort of roll up our sleeves and get to work.
Yeah, my preference certainly is not to have the chair as a bully pulpit. So people who feel they want to use that as a mechanism for pursuing their interests, I think, are not the right person to be the chair.
This is Tim Allen.
Yeah, go ahead.
I guess I agree that perhaps this meeting may not be the best time to, just my opinion, to try to elect a chair. But I think between now and the next meeting, perhaps, you know, those who would be interested could give some thought to it and perhaps let the group know, then we could make that decision at the next meeting. My thinking is just that there might be some on the call who might be thinking about it, but it's just difficult to make a decision, you know, 5 minutes into the whole working group process here.
You've said just about what I was going to suggest, that for the moment we keep, I stay as the interim chair. I don't think today's meeting is going to raise a lot of controversial issues. I may be wrong on that. So I don't think impartiality is a main issue right now, and we should work privately to try to identify one or more people who are interested and capable of doing it in the next 2 weeks. That sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next issue on the proposed on the agenda was overview of the issues report in if required. Now, I'd like to hope that most people have done their homework and read those documents. But if anyone feels that we really should review the overall issue and the rationale for both requesting the issues report and pursuing a PDP, we can certainly do that. And I presume Marika would be willing to do a quick overview.
Yes, I would be, but indeed, if people have done their homework, it would be in principle the same overview that I gave as well at the workshop, so that has all been recorded and has been posted as well on the wiki.
Okay. In the absence of strong comments to go ahead with it, I would suggest we look at the working group charter and how we plan to continue from here on. Marika, do you want to quickly review it?
Yes. I'll just put it up on Adobe Connect. I've put it in there. Scroll there. So I hope everyone had an opportunity as well to actually read through the charter, but I can quickly take everyone through it. So basically, skipping the whereas. As there were a number of issues that were outlined in the issues report that were felt needed further exploration and discussion before diving into the specific issues, specific charter questions, it was decided that the working group should first pursue availability of further information from ICANN compliance staff to understand how current RAA provisions and consensus policies regarding deletion, auto-renewal, and recovery of domain names following expirations are enforced. That would be a first task. Second one is to review and understand the current domain name lifecycle. A third one is to review current registrar practices regarding domain name expiration, renewal, and post-expiration recovery. And following that, the group is requested to consider the specific questions. I won't go into each of these specifically because I think everyone has read the issues report, and I'm sure we'll come back to these. So the working group is expected to organize an issue update or workshop at the SOL meeting, in addition to providing an update to the GNSO Council. So I don't think it's expected the working group will be done by that time, but the hope is that the working group will have made sufficient progress to have something to present to the broader community for review and discussion, and do the same for the Council. It's pointed out as well that the working group should consider recommendations for best practices as well as or instead of recommendations for consensus policies. And then there's an outline of the working group processes. Do you want to go through these, Alan, or?
No, I think not. I mean, we just took those from the ones that are being used by pretty much all GNSO working groups right now.
Maybe then it's just worth going to the milestones at the end of this document. This is basically a timeline that the drafting team putting together this charter has developed on the basis of previous working groups and policy development processes. So the aim would be to have an initial report in 150 to 170 days, followed by a public comment period, which would then end at 170 to 200 days, and have a preliminary report at approximately 190 to 200 days after the working group was formed. And it's indicated here as well that if the working group at any time feels that the changes needed to the milestones, it should resubmit a revised timeline to the GNSO Council for approval.
Okay, thank you, Marika. I'd like to focus for a minute on what you described as the interim report at the SOL meeting. During the Council discussions that initiated this PDP, both I and Tim, representing the Registrar's constituency, felt pretty strongly that one of our targets should be to not have a final resolution to this issue for SOL, but at least have an overview of the groundwork and come to general agreement on where we're heading. Tim, does that fairly characterize what you were saying?
Yes, I believe it does.
Okay. A quick calculation says that's about 12 weeks from now, so we have something like 5 meetings between now and then, which perhaps puts in perspective our job if we are to try to come to a moderate consensus in time to present something at the SOL meeting which resembles where we think we're going. That's a rather challenging target.
If I could add something to that, because, of course, the SOL meeting could be used as well if this group sees that there's, you know, certain issues where they would like more input or more community discussion. It could be taken as well as an opportunity to, pick out certain issues and put those on the table to make optimum use of having a large number of people there to discuss some of these questions.
I agree, and I think I would couch that in saying failing to come to some consensus, we could use the SOL meeting for that. So I'd like to be optimistic at this point and hope we can come to some general direction in that time frame and not have to resort to what you described. But yes, you're correct. Okay, the next item is discussion of work plan. And one of the first items I think that we have to do before we can even start the discussion is come to some agreement on the terminology we're going to be using. The term registrant, which is key to this whole discussion, is one that has a variety of interpretations. And if we, for instance, say who is the registrant the day after the domain expires, we get different people answering the question in different ways, and I think we need to come up with some uniform terminology so when we are referring to the person who owned the domain the day before expiration, we use a certain name and then go forward from there so that we don't have any misunderstandings about what we're talking about when we start talking about the rights of the registrant. Does that seem to make sense?
I would agree with that, Alan. Margie, perhaps you were involved in a lot of the RRA changes. I'm not as up on that issue as you are. Is the term registrant defined anywhere in the RRA agreement?
No. It's referred to as registered name holder. And I can pull up that language and circulate it to the list, but I'm not aware of a definition of registrant itself.
So perhaps, Alan, in order to keep some uniformity and, if you will, continuity between the different agreements, maybe we should start calling this the registered name holder.
I have no problem with that. I guess the point I was making was that at the point following expiration, there are a number of different players who may or should have some rights associated with the ownership of the name.
Well, I think that's one of the things that...
And I just want to make sure that we're using terminology that is consistent so we don't have someone saying something and someone else misunderstanding what they meant.
Alan Mason here. I just had a question, if I can, for Margie. Margie, is that term defined, registered name holder?
Yes, I believe it is. I'm going to try to... find it right now and put it as a note to you guys. But, yeah, I believe that is defined. I have to find it.
All right, thanks.
This is Jeff here. The registered name holder is defined as the holder of a registered name, and then there's a long definition of what the registered name is. But I think, Alan, I think you're right. I think some of the terms that we had been discussed were current registered name holder and possibly previous registered name holder. I think somebody had said original, but I don't think that made sense because that could be, first person to ever register the name before it, times ago.
People have also used the term, the registrant of record, which has yet another set of meanings when you start coming into privacy issues. And I'm not really quibbling. I don't think we need to quibble over which word is used for which. I just think that early on in this process, we need to identify the different stages of the process and come up with a name, whether the name we use going forward or not doesn't really matter, in the long term doesn't matter, just so we all know what we're talking about when we're saying something.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I don't think registrant or registered name holder makes a difference. I think it's the current versus previous that was the issue that came up in the past.
Okay, I am going to...
This is just a suggestion.
Sure.
This is Tim. Another option might be, this is the post-expiry domain name recovery working group. So we're talking about domain names that have expired for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps, the expiring registrant or expiring registered name holder might be a clear way to designate what we're talking about. Now, another possibility is that we could just all agree that whenever we're talking about the registered name holder of one of these names, we're talking about the original or previous, or however we want to describe it.
My inclination is to keep as simple as possible the wording that we use for the one we're going to be talking about most, just so we don't end up in tongue-twisting sentences. I'm going to suggest that I hate to volunteer for things, but I'm going to suggest that I propose at least a list of different registrants we're talking about and put some arbitrary names on them, and I'm willing to change it all if you all disagree, but just so we have a list that we can start with, if that's okay with you.
I have no objection with that, Alan. Again, not to sound like a lawyer, but I am. I just thought I would give
there. There are probably a few on this list.
Exactly. But I think what we have to look at here is we have agreements in place. And we talk about, Jeff, I think you talked about it, a name that's, what was the a term that's in the database or maintained for a registered name holder. We're talking about names that are appearing in the registry. Some of these continue to appear in the zone file. So, again, when we're looking at defining these terms, we need to look at the registrar agreement. We need to look at the RRA. There are different agreements because this domain name, which is, has a legal state associated with it. Because, again, some registrars are having their accounts credited. Now, again, who is receiving the benefit when that registrar account is being debited by the registry? Is it the registered name holder, or is it some entity coming into its place? So this is why I think it's really important we need to step back and very carefully look at the interplay as to what are the legal rights. And that's why one of my questions went back to the original redemption grace period work back in 2002, because there, when this initiative originally got started, it was about providing predictability for the registered name holder who accidentally had their name expired.
And I think that's where we're back at today.
Yep.
Hey, Alan, this is Tim. Mike, I think, I was going to try to respond, but I didn't see it or long enough, your message long enough or early enough before the meeting to really respond then, but I think that we can answer your questions or your concerns in that first part of the working groups that they're chartered to do. In 2 and 3, reviewing the current domain name lifecycle and then reviewing current registrar practices should encompass, I think, most of what you just described. And I think definitions are important. We want to make sure we're all on the same page when we're talking about these things. But we may not need to get too nitty-gritty about the particular legal definition until we actually have recommendations, and I think that's where we'll want to be a lot more diligent about how we put those together and look to compliance staff for assistance to make sure that it's done appropriately. But I think right now just having some common ground on what terminology we're using is all that's really needed.
Tim, we're going to get a bad reputation for agreeing with each other and everything. That was a joke.
I was going to say, come with that,
Alan. Remember, I'm just, I'm not saying just the liaison, but I'm a liaison from the council, so
yeah.
I want to interject some ideas and things, but they're not necessarily, what has to be agreed to or what we have to go with.
I was talking on a personal level.
And put it this way, Tim, you know me. I have no problem. If I object, I'll let everyone know. I have no objection to that. And again, what I think I'm going to try to do is, prepare an analysis of the different legal contracts, look at the legal terms, and just put that out there to the list so that we could, have a baseline reference.
Yeah. Just recall that we're here where we are today because the contracts did not foresee what is going on today. They don't disallow it.
If you look back at the original work of the redemption grace period, there was originally talk about a stage 2 where a registrant was going to have a right to choose which registrar they could recover a name from. Now, again, part of our problems was this was never a consensus policy, so registrars were never bound to offer this service, number one. Number two, stage two was never implemented. Registrants were never given that choice. Today, when a registrant recovers a name, their only choice in the marketplace is to do it through the original registrar of record. So I think we need to look back at that historical perspective to see what was intended and what has not really happened in the marketplace for whatever reason.
Yeah, without trying to make this the substantive discussion, though, that is the redemption grace period, and we're also looking at the period prior to that.
Correct.
Which is the more controversial one today, perhaps.
But that what happens, though, is some people are denied the opportunity, as the issuer's report says, some people are denied even having the name get to the redemption grace period.
That's right. And as I understand the policy, Tim or someone excuse me, with the history can correct me, the original intent of the various policies was that the original owner, as it were, the owner prior to expiry, could change registrars in the period following expiration.
That is correct.
But this, in fact, this cannot happen today because of the various processes that go on. So we certainly need to look at that whole overall process of what's happening post-expiration and look at what both is happening today and what we believe should be the target in the future. All right, how do we come up with the charter essentially gives an overall workflow of what we do. My question at this point is, how do we actually put that in place? To what extent do we need to discuss and review the flow at expiration and what happens, and to what extent do we feel that's already been covered by the various reviews, and we just need to start talking about the substance of where we go from here?
If I could chime in, I think what we have to do, Alan, is I think we need to do some fact-finding here. I mean, we had some constructive feedback from the compliance team on some of their compliance work, but as they reported, and as I think Rob Hall noted, that was only done at the quote-unquote registrar level. That did not flow down to resellers. So again, when we're talking about protecting the expectation rights and the registrant's expectation, if they're dealing with a reseller, we kind of have a gap there in coverage. So I think we need to do some fact-finding here, and I think one of the things that would probably be helpful is perhaps maybe a survey that Tim and some of the other registrars, Mason, you can go back to the registrar constituency and start doing some fact-finding within the registrars as to what their current practices are, number one. And then I think the second fact-finding that we need to undertake is to perhaps have ICANN staff go not to the compliance people, but perhaps to the ombudsman as well as the chief registrar liaison and say, what kind of complaints have you been getting? Because I think one of the things that the compliance people were looking at doing is beginning to try to look at complaints to see whether they might be some metric points to look at in the future. So I think we need to look at ICANN and say, hey, are you getting complaints from people? Because clearly there were some concerns within the ALAC that initiated this initial issues report. I think we need to follow up and ask ICANN if they have any additional data points that we can look at in our analysis. Instead of dealing in hypotheticals, let's look at facts.
Here, here.
Yeah. And Alan, this is Tim. I think in regards to the resellers, though, we want to take into account the new RAA. And I know that doesn't apply to all registrars right now, but it will in time. And I'm not sure how many have actually signed on. I know all 8 of GoDaddy's registrars have actually signed the new RAA, and I think there's a number of others in Sydney that were as well.
That indeed is probably one of the fact-finding things we need to know.
Right, because I think those there's changes in that agreement that affect the reseller-registrar relationship and enforcement of some of these obligations, et cetera. And so as we look at that, as compliance looks at what's been happening, and I think considering how will those changes help or affect or have no help or effect on what we're looking at. So I don't want to miss that.
Could I have any thoughts from staff about how quickly these kind of things could be done? You know, given that we haven't specified them in detail at this point, but nevertheless.
Alan, I think William's on the line, isn't he, from compliance?
Yep, I think so.
Yes.
I mean, on the survey side, I think that's something, you know, we can put together quite quickly is, you know, as soon as you have agreement on what kind of questions should be asked.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Is that William who just asked for the question
yes,
to be repeated?
Yes, this is William.
Hi, William. This
Hi.
Is Mike Pelage. In my discussions over the years with the ombudsman, he says that they generally have a relationship, the ombudsman and the chief registrar liaison, when they get complaints where they try to ferret out, you know, consumer complaints versus, if you will, compliance issues. And I guess what I was asking the compliance department is, do you have any access to, you know, records or complaints that are being filed by registrants complaining about not being able to transfer a name post-expiration or someone taking over their name, these types of complaints? Is that anything that gets funneled up to you, or is this something that's probably between the ombudsman and the chief registrar liaison?
No, so the compliance department regularly tracks these complaints. There are a number of them related to transfers. I don't know if within that number, you know, how they qualify what the transfer problems are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're just categorized as transfer or, you know, other, you know, I believe we have probably 25 different categories of complaints.
When you say transfer, you mean between registrars?
Correct.
Or,
yeah.
Okay. You're not talking about transfer to another registrant?
No.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of, no. The majority of those are categorized as, you know, inter-registrar transfers. Obviously, the registrant calling ICANN to bring to our attention that a transfer has failed or the authorization code has expired or was never operational to begin with.
Okay, but transfers during the life of the domain are not really the subject of this.
But Alan, what we want to be careful of here, Alan, if I can, is a lot of times this is kind of what happens in the day-to-day world. Is most people generally try to sync up a transfer right around the
expiration
date.
Right.
Expiration date.
Correct.
So I think what we have to be careful of here is, you know, if it's possible for someone trying to transfer a name in and around the renewal date to perhaps miss it and then the name fall into, if you will, an expiry state, and then that registrant exposed to some of the unpleasantries that have been raised in the issues report. So I agree, not every complaint that is finding itself into the transfer bucket is probably going to be within our purview. But if William and perhaps some of the compliance people may be able to look through and identify if there are any sort of transfer issues, whether to a registrant, or getting back to the issue of, hey, I wanted to go from registrar A to registrar B, but I was impeded from doing so. Now I'm trapped at my registrar, and this goes back to the 2002 work of, you know, can I switch registrars after I had a bad experience with my first one? I think there may be some data points there that are worth having staff try to ferret out if possible.
There may well be. The more common question I would have asked is complaints about I lost my domain or the registrar did something so I no longer have control of my domain.
I will check as well with the registrar liaison.
I hope that there are data points for that kind of thing as well.
I have kind of informally some data, and these are the cases that I deal with primarily from Latin America, and primarily they involve resellers, namely because usually folks register the domain name in tandem with other services like web hosting and web design. So by the time, you know, the reseller is no longer to be found, and then the registrant has no clue what the who is information is, who the registrar of record is, and so that's the specific case of problems that I have dealt with, and this is when primarily with resellers though.
Well, would you find it reasonable if we ask a more general question of can you characterize the types of issues you have related to you know, the things that happened around expiration, and then try to quantify them as possible. Instead of us trying to identify the things that you've already found, if we ask a more general question and go from there, is that reasonable from your point
Absolutely.
Of view?
Absolutely. So what I can commit to do is to, within the realm of transfer issues, identify what the range of problems that have been brought to ICANN's attention are, and then we can, you know, the working group can see what they are.
Can I ask a question?
But this is Tim. Beyond that, don't we want to try to quantify those? I mean,
absolutely.
We can identify a lot of things, but if, just because it happens once doesn't mean it might float to a priority within the working group. So being able to quantify would certainly be helpful.
Sure.
Yeah, and I don't know. This is Mason. I had another question on it too, Wayne. If further to that, is there a way to categorize what would be characterized as complaints? I mean, for example, if it's a transfer issue during the term of a registration versus a transfer issue post expiry, or whatever other categories there might be in terms of the complaints that are received.
I will look into all of these, and I will get back to you.
Okay, well, okay.
And I'm happy as well to check with the registrar liaison and the ombudsman to see if they have any data that they will be able to share on these issues.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that question, actually, which is where do other potential complaints flow into ICANN, not just through the compliance staff, but elsewhere?
I think registrar liaisons get a lot of complaints, but I don't know if they necessarily keep track of, categorizing these complaints. We need to look into that.
Yeah, the web form that people fill in on InterNIC, those are the ones that I assume go to the compliance department. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Is that the only avenue?
That's the official avenue. I don't think.
No, I know, but is that the only one?
My experience, again, in talking with Frank Fowley is the ombudsman when he sees a problem, he tries to hand it off to the appropriate people. So there are a number of complaints. If you look at Frank's annual ombudsman report, you will see that any complaints that come into him that are not about fairness, et cetera, but have to do more with, you know, consumer complaints or something like that, he generally tries to refer them to the appropriate ICANN staff. Again, before this used to be Tim Cole, Tim Cole as the chief registrar liaison.
As Dan.
Now that David has a much more robust team, some of those complaints may be going there. But I think the three buckets you want to be looking at are compliance, ombudsman, and chief registrar liaison.
Yeah, well, that's what I was driving at is, you know, if there's, I mean, really, and I know I've harped on this before, really, I'm still surprised no quantification has been done to this point, but it would be responsible to do some level of quantification now, and if there are other avenues where complaints or questions about how registration services operate come into ICANN, whether they're sort of official or unofficial, I mean, there may be an unofficial channel where people can offer some kind of their own quantification of their experience that would be useful to this whole effort, then maybe we should consider that.
Yeah. Margie, you have something to say?
I'm sorry. I do want to offer some numbers. I'm not sure if they will help clarify all the issues that have been mentioned a few seconds ago. So overall, transfer problems from January until the end of May of this year, we received 1,270 complaints. Now, there's another category, register service. Domain name dispute. So I'm not sure, because a lot of these obviously are self-reported, so if the registrant is not clear exactly what the problem is, he or she perceives there's a problem, but perhaps technically it's not well defined from their end, that is the way that a lot of these get filtered up to us.
Margie, you had a comment?
Yes, actually the question for William on those statistics. Do those statistics come from calls to the front desk? Because I believe we keep track of complaints that come in through the telephone, but I really have to defer to William on that.
I would have to check with Connie Brown, who actually does a tally on these, to see if she actually includes those that come to ICANN somewhat less formally, like my phone number and obviously the front desk. I can clarify that later.
Yeah.
Hey, I have one question. This is Jeff. If it's possible, I don't know, because we're looking at, when we're looking to quantify this, we're just looking at the sheer number of complaints versus how many of them are actually valid complaints versus, you know, user error, they're looking for something in there. I wouldn't want those to be counted or put into the mix of saying these are actual issues versus it's a complaint because the person might have typed something in wrong, or I don't know if ICANN follows up and says, hey, these were valid issues versus these were just, it could have been user error.
On the other hand, we also have to be careful that there are some classes of user error which we know occur, and I think we have a responsibility to try to compensate. The classic one being the email address that you specified is no longer working. And we know that happens on a regular basis, and the question is there anything we can do to fix that kind of case? That's part of the substantive discussion we need to have. The other issue in terms of quantification is, how do we get any measure whatsoever of the number of complaints that ICANN eventually sees versus the number of people who don't complain through a channel that we can track?
Well, I think, Alan, you know, the question here is the ALAC, what they did is the ALAC did its job. It listened to complaints within the at-large user community. You came forward and had staff, you know, if you will, issue the staff report on the issues report. So I think ALAC has done their job. I think what we're doing here is trying to do some outreach to validate some of the concerns from ALAC, because you're right. There are going to be some people that just probably throw up their hands and say, okay, I'll pay whatever to get my name back and go away and are never heard, that will probably never show up in any of these complaints. So ALAC has done the right job by bringing this concern to the GNSO's attention. So you've done the right, the ALAC has done the right thing. I think what we, this working group, need to do is attempt to validate that.
And that indeed was the question I was asking.
Alan, can I be in the queue?
Sure. Go ahead. All right, Michael, were you finished?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I just wanted to ask, actually, Mason, because, you know, we're looking at ICANN, the number of complaints they might keep track of and have numbers on, but my question would be, would registrars a kind of data, and would they be willing to share, like, in the overall number of complaints that they receive, what number, for example, is related to expiration-related issues? Because that might give some insight as well as to, you know, how big of a problem it is.
Yeah, I can't speak for all registrars, obviously, but you know, some are going to be much more protective of their customer related data, no matter what it is, than others will be. But I mean, I think I can speak for my own company, and I've put this on record before that, and we operate a retail registrar as well as an aftermarket service, and you know, I can tell you that a complaint on the order of once a month would be about average, if not above average. I think maybe somewhere between 8 and 10 per year would be something I would forecast every year.
I think we need to publicize the name of your registrar so we can tell people about it.
That's funny, because security is a big selling point. But actually, Alan, what I'm referring to is when a name becomes available in the marketplace, and you know, like it's worked its way up through the registry, and we acquire it for an interested customer, then the previous registrant may at that point say, wait a minute, you know, I didn't intend to let that go, and then they contact us on behalf of their new customer, or on behalf of our new customer, and you know, and they lodge a complaint. That just happens very, very rarely.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put my stake in the ground as the originator of this, and I'll say we can't protect everyone from everything, and there's going to be a finite amount of time, and probably not all that long, but if you don't pay attention at all, you may lose your name, and that's life. I don't think we can stop that from happening, and yes, there will always be a small number of complaints post that date, and my answer as a consumer advocate is tough.
But as a consumer advocate, you want predictability for those consumers.
I want predictability, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is what ICANN's all about.
All right, what else do we need to do in the first stages that we should be initiating at this meeting?
I think Tatiana has her hand raised in Adobe.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I have only a comment, because I'm a representative of Russian registrar, and we have the same some complaints from our clients from Russia and post-Soviet. As a matter of fact, that our clients usually use ccTLD domain, and they don't know exactly the whole life cycle. So it's very strange for the for them to lose this domain name, ctld domain name. So it's very important to explain them the processes which we can see after the expiration date for domain names. It's my comment.
Thank you. Any other thoughts on what do we need to do at the first stages before we can start substantive discussion on where we should be going with this?
Well, Alan, if I may, this is Mason. I think really there seems to be a lot of homework to be done. I mean, we're unclear about the scope of a problem at all, if it exists. We're unclear about the full range of marketplace mechanisms that become that come into play at the time a domain name becomes available again. We're unclear about a lot, and you know, I much prefer that we get some due diligence done so that we can accurately inform whatever this group does or doesn't do.
And the question I'm asking is exactly what is it we need to do, and what do we need to request of staff or other people, so that at our next meeting or the follow-on one, we can use that information productively.
Well, the first thing I want to see, frankly, is quantification of a problem, if in fact there is one. I mean, I know I had a discussion with you and then separately with Cheryl in Sydney about about your beliefs that a lot of this problem stemmed from reseller activity, which I just frankly don't know enough about. And if the two of you are able to document your own experiences with resellers or those of the people that you represent, I think that would bring a lot more clarity from my point of view on what the reseller problem is. If ICANN staff can provide quantification of categorized complaints about transfer issues or anything else, I think that would help us. So, I mean, I would ask staff to do that homework. I would ask maybe the two of you to provide some kind of summary of your experiences with resellers so that we're clear on what that problem might be.
Well, I think I can only speak on my own behalf. I'm sure Cheryl has her own comments. I mean, I can give you the half dozen anecdotal states, things that I've seen, some of which come down to someone doing something that we can address in this kind of group, some of which being just sleazy behavior that we're not going to fix by setting rules.
Yeah.
And, let's face it, if someone is willing to flaunt whatever rules there are today,
then
adding new rules doesn't fix the problem.
Yeah. Well, everybody on this call is extremely busy, as is ICANN staff. I mean, we're operating at very high capacity, and I understand that, but we should be clear on that before we go to... I'm sorry?
Cheryl?
As are our registrants and at-large people, their core business is usually in no way, shape, or form involved with domain name numbering and the Internet.
Yeah.
There have been a number of complaints brought forward, and I was delighted to hear that at least some of the people on this call think that what ALAC did by bringing this forward was the right thing to do. The quantification and the metrics are essential, and we will ask again for cold, hard facts to come in, and I will specifically instruct our staff to ask at each of the regional meetings for not anecdotal but actual evidence to be brought forward wherever possible. But we just need the metrics. Where it comes from, I'm slightly less concerned about, but I am very concerned that we have a look at some of the metrics before and after resellers are involved with the new RAA, because that might give us, even if it is only one a month or less than, a change in the benchmark before and after. At least that change in the RAA has occurred.
All right, so on the quantification issue, if we have only anecdotal evidence, then that should be provided.
Just anecdotal evidence, though.
No. If there is only anecdotal evidence, it should be provided and noted as such. If there are other avenues to collect evidence,
yes,
then those avenues should be employed. If there are not other avenues, then that should be noted as well. That's my point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I do note that that this discussion has been held for a number of years in various forums. The ALAC did go through the process of deciding whether this is something we want to put energy into, and that wasn't frivolously taken. And the GNSO at that point, following the issues report, decided it was worthy of a PDP. So I don't think we want to be in a position to say we cannot get, you know, to quantitatively define exactly how many people this happens to, therefore we're going to ignore the issue altogether. So quantitative information, whether anecdotal or statistical, is relevant, but I don't think we want to completely discard things if we cannot find, you know, a sufficient evidence that it is happening in massive quantities, especially when we're talking, the registrars we're talking to are likely the more honorable ones who are not the ones causing many of these problems.
Yeah, well, okay, then to revert to your original question, which is, you know, what do we do now?
Yeah.
You know, my answer to that question is get as much data as possible so that we can accurately inform our efforts. I mean, there as you I think correctly point out, you know, there may be avenues where best practices are best employed, and or there may be an avenue where a PDP is warranted. Regardless, I don't want to undertake
and
the effort.
The PDP has a number of outcomes, and both best practices and policy
right.
are potential outcomes explicitly for this PDP, although implicitly for anyone.
Right. Well, my main point being, let's get as much of the data at hand as we can. Otherwise, we're frankly operating in the blind, and I think that's foolish.
And to the extent we can do this quickly, I agree. What else do we need to do initiate at this point to make sure that our future meetings are productive? We will ask for this information. I am dubious whether we'll get an awful lot in the 2 weeks. I think we've pretty well decided to have meetings biweekly. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's a good target. You know, we have 2 weeks. I will try to put the legal analysis together on the registered name holder. I will look that through all multiple agreements, and I will try to, if you will, draft a survey that the registrars could perhaps provide feedback to add to our data points of analysis, and then perhaps we could discuss that at our next call to continue data gathering.
Okay. In the interest of full disclosure, I'll say that I will not be available for the meeting 4 weeks from today. So either someone else is chairing that. Someone else is chairing that meeting,
chair.
Or we will need to rearrange it around that. We don't need to decide that today, however.
Alan, there's a hand up in the Adobe room.
Whose hand is it?
James.
James, go ahead, James. James, are you here?
I believe James is using the Adobe microphone rather than the phone bridge. Marika, can you help us here with that?
Oh, he said sorry, audio dropped.
Yeah, he dropped the audio. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe until before James comes back, I can just. I don't know if you're already wrapping up the call, Alan, but I just want to.
No, I was not yet, but go ahead.
Okay, no, because I just want to make sure that we cover as well the last point on the agenda. Because I just wanted to know that, you know, according to the bylaws, we need to publish a notification of the initiation of the PDP in combination with a public comment period.
Yes.
We've done that before, basically just saying this is the, you know, this is the issue we're having a PDP on. These are different questions. You know, submit any information that you would like. Normally, this public comment period gets a little response, and I just wanted to check with the group if there are any specific questions that they would like to highlight in this public comment period that they might think might trigger or might inform the discussion better.
To the extent anyone responds to I can't public comments, I think it's certainly worthwhile pursuing the question that Mason has been asking of particular problems associated with domain name expiration. You know, information would be appreciated. So I think highlighting that we are not only looking for generic statements saying we support or disagree with this this effort, but information which will inform the effort is highly desirable. And I think we need to refine the words there to make it understandable.
I can put a first draft together and circulate that to the list so people can have a look at it and provide their input before we post it for public comment, if everyone agrees.
Given this is bylaw mandated and there's no particular reason not to do it, I don't think anyone's going to object, but I'm willing to entertain them now.
No, I'd like to see that, Marika.
Okay.
Yep, that'd be good. Oh, you got lots of
hands
on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, this is James. I reconnected. I apologize for that technical glitch.
Okay.
And, Alan, just very quickly, as we're discussing the different types of data that we'd like to gather or the facts that we would like to survey, perhaps the most appropriate place would be for item number 3 on the current view of the charter is that we could also investigate what markets, services, or solutions are currently available to registered name holders to prevent inadvertent accidents.
I'm sorry, you're cutting in and out. I can't make out half of what you said. Can you try again? Maybe it'll work better.
Yeah, I apologize for that. Is this any better at all?
Yes, much.
Okay. Well, just wanted to add for item number 3, if we could include a survey of any market-based services that would be offered to registrants to guard against inadvertent expiration or deletion of names.
Okay.
Tim, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I saw a note from Barry, which I thought was very good. It's in the chat, so I want to point that out. But I also want to just make an observation, or just maybe a reminder, that in the charter, because there's been a lot of discussion about metrics and things, if there isn't enough, if we don't have strong quantifiable metrics about problems, what that would mean. I just want to remind the group that the only option here is not to end up with a policy or a regulation, that the other option that's open is best practices. So I just want to keep that in mind as well, as we look at various issues and what we have actual, evidence or statistics to back up or whatever. There might be cases where we might want to consider a best practice versus actual policy. So that option is there.
Certainly, it's one of the formal potential outcomes of this PDP, and to the extent that we believe a best practice will apply sufficiently well to resolve problems, yes, certainly best practices are reasonable outcomes. And I think Barry's comment, which I hadn't seen, thank you for pointing it out, I think is very relevant. Anybody else with a hand? Marika, you have a microphone. I'm not sure if that's an old one or not.
I don't have a microphone on my screen.
Oh, I do on you do on my screen.
I had nothing further to add.
All right. Is there anything else that we can explicitly request from staff or from the public which will help us do our job better at this point? I'm sure we're going to uncover information as we go along.
I think that's probably going to be fleshed out on the list, and hopefully we can use the list to get a lot of work done intersessionally as opposed to queuing everything up for an hour call.
I would hope so. And I plan to reply to the comments you made, and I trust others will also. It's a good opportunity for people to think about these things and then come up with answers that we can then continue discussing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else? We're an hour into the call. We have officially another half hour to go if we need it. I think for an initial call, we've probably covered about as much as we can. Is this time? Excuse me. Is this time agreeable for everyone 2 weeks from now?
Alan, Cheryl here. Would it inconvenience the rest of the group greatly to convene either a half or a full hour later than the beginning of this call? It's just I'd prefer a 5 a.m. as opposed to a 4 a.m. meeting, if possible, at least each now and then.
I certainly have no problem with it. I don't know, but...
No, that's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, as long as you don't have to do any 5 a.m.s on our side, hey, no problem there.
Well, today wasn't an issue because I've been on call since my time midnight, so this is my fifth hour of teleconference. But that's not going to be the case every fortnight. That would only happen once a month. So if we can either in alternate fortnights or as a regular thing work more towards the hour later, it's a slightly more humane thing to do to me.
Let's propose that as for the meeting 2 weeks from today, and if there are any major objections on the list, we'll see them.
Marika, is there any problems from ICANN staff, Marika, with you and Margie on that, conflicting with other calls?
Well,
I would need to look into that. For us, it would get, of course, later. For Europeans, it gets later into the evening, so it might be an issue for some others on this side of the ocean. But I think a half an hour, most people hopefully should certainly be able to accommodate.
Okay. Well, let's start moving it up slowly then.
Oh, good. It'll be a creep.
What does the group propose for the meeting 4 weeks from today? I'll be in Vietnam, and there's no chance I'll be available for the meeting at this time, or even worse, an hour later. Do we want to reschedule, proceed without me?
Is that 4 weeks?
That's 4 weeks, the 28th.
All right. Well, let's just take one step at a time.
Okay, fine.
we'll sit there. We'll see what work we can get done via the list. And as I said, hopefully, you know, perhaps these calls will be less important if we're getting our work done asynchronously offline.
All right. And we will make sure that the call is out. There is very heavy support of this work group from registrars, not nearly as much from some of the other groups. And we'll see if we can get it a little bit more balanced, in particular more from the user side.
Oh.
Is there anything else we need to cover today? Then I guess Marika and I will try to put together a brief summary of what happened today and get that out in the next day or so. And we look forward to discussion on the list.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Thanks
you.
A lot, Alan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Alan. Bye.